dive in, guys.
Do we start with the jingle or? No. So I'm joined here with a few more people than what we've seen in the last episodes. And we're just continuing our conversation about how cancer has impacted us in different ways. And everybody has a different story. And so, like, that's what I'm mostly, like, really excited about with this kind of stuff is hearing from different people, the potential of whoever's listening, how that can impact that person. Ange and I were just talking before we started hitting record about how it is just important just to talk. Sometimes you don't know what to say. Sometimes you might not even feel comfortable about doing it. Or it's just sometimes it feels repetitious. Right. Like I've told this story so many times point. Like, how many more times can I say it? And how is it? You know, all these different thoughts go through my mind at times. But I know, like, any time that I open up about something or I've shared about how just doing the photos for everybody coming in, I would say at least half the group said something about how cancer impacted them, and it just opens up that conversation. So, you know, sometimes someone's just waiting for that person to say something so that way they get that sense, like, oh, I can talk about this. And so that's, you know, like what we're saying, just such an important thing. Mm-hmm.
That sharing your story, sometimes people think that, you know, that no one really wants to know what's going on with them. But by sharing your story, you find that there are other people that are dealing with, you know, kind of the same things that they are.
You know, it's like I remember at the meeting, the meet and greet that we had, how we were talking about how fresh it is with you. Just a few months. And then I was like, yeah, my sister-in-law just passed away about the same time frame. So it's like, you know, cancer just does
never
too
quits.
Much.
Yeah,
yeah,
just,
never,
it's quits.
Always there.
Never quits.
Yeah. If you don't know about the campaign, in short, there's 25 of us and we're all representing different cancers. Unfortunately, there's that many to talk about. There's also different colors that are associated with that. A big campaign that's been going out. I'll leave links to all our stuff in the video description too. Each of us have at least $2,500 that we're trying to raise individually. And the overall goal is $60,000. And I want to say we're
about 74%.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. So,
okay. Well, I've written an original song to open up the podcast. I'd like to perform it now. Just kidding.
She really does.
She really does. You're right. She really does.
Let's
have a song.
Talk about cancer.
Okay. I am Kendall Shows. I'm representing all cancers. My dad had pancreatic cancer, and my mother, she's a survivor of breast cancer twice, 15 years apart. So I'm not sure about the colors for each. Obviously, I think pink is breast cancer. I'm not sure about pancreatic. It might be purple, but. Anyway, I've loved being a part of this. I love the practical way this organization helps people with day-to-day challenges. So I'm really psyched to be a part of it.
And I'm A.G. Saliba, and I also represent different cancers. My mother's mother, my grandmother, when I was a child, she was diagnosed with breast cancer twice, so I experienced that and still have memories of her treatments and the things that she went through with that. And then I had a melanoma scare about 14 years ago. And then lost Mark's dad to cancer and a really close dear friend to cancer. And I would say in the last 12 years. So cancer is a big part of my life, unfortunately, caring for those that have been sick. And like Kendall said, you know, this program, this foundation is so important to those that may not have insurance or even still have insurance, but there's other expenses that they have to have in their cancer battle. And so I think that how could you not want to be a part of such a great foundation?
I agree. I'm Ashley McGee, and I'm representing my mom. And she had breast cancer and cervical cancer. And then back 2 years ago, she was diagnosed with bladder cancer. So that's the cancer that I'm representing here with this foundation. It was in November and she was diagnosed, and she's passed away just not even 3 months ago. So when this newly you know, Founded Foundation came to me. It was a month after my mom had died. And they're like, you know, maybe you want to think about it. And I said I would think about it, but I knew like right then that I would turn my pain into a purpose. So through that, they've been wonderful. And it's just talking about it has really helped me just with to get through a lot of dark days.
So I'm Josh, and I'm representing lymphoma cancer. That's what my dad was diagnosed with. And if you know my story, you've heard me say this, and it's just it was a quick thing. That's probably the worst part about it, that we didn't have too much time to, you know, check off any last things to do or, you know, make sure peace of mind about anything. It just like got diagnosed. You try to go through the processes. You listen to all the experts, and the news just kept on getting worse. You know, part of the issue was, you know, he had a heart attack back in 2003 or four. And so he was stayed on the medication too long, and it ate away at his muscular system and all that kind of stuff. So by the time he's like diagnosed with all this cancer stuff, he had no strength to even fight anything. And so like that was the hard part, like the stacked issues with that kind of stuff. So and I, you know, all the different medical terms that you have to go through and all the different things like that was kind of overwhelming, not knowing what to do because of all the stuff that you have to go through and listen through and hope for the best. And I didn't really know much about lymphoma or anything like that. I didn't really know anybody else that had that kind of stuff. There was other issues in the past, like my grandma, long time ago at this point, but like there was colon cancer, and colon cancer was something that's what took my sister-in-law.
How old was she?
Close to 50.
Yeah.
And it just, hers was like, I think she got diagnosed about 3 or 4 years ago, was given 5 years, and then it just, it's still a short amount of time. Cancer just screws you over in so many different ways.
I mean, it does. Great way to put it. It's very true.
And I can remember, like I said, as a child, I was probably 10, I want to think, and with my grandmother, she had had it, you know, early on before I could remember, but her second time around was when I was old enough to understand what was going on. And she had had a mastectomy that she had both breasts removed. And so, of course, growing up as a girl, you're thinking, you know, what's going on with grandmother, you know, kind of thing. And then the second time, she had to do radiation. And, you know, too, just with the way that medicine has changed, you know, radiation in the 80s was a lot different than the radiation I believe probably is now. And I can remember just the things that my mother had to, you know, help buy, and my aunt, because her skin would be so burned that she couldn't wear, you know, certain things because it would just stick to her. And, you know, and that was just a tragic memory of that, that just knowing that the things that we are doing to help with, you know, that side of cancer is, it's a purpose. It's a purpose to kind of be a part of something, you know, so good to help those that are going through such a hard time.
There are people in this community that are facing this on their own. They don't have family. They don't have friends. Like one memory. So my dad was 53 when he died of pancreatic cancer. So I was a newlywed, and then I had a sister in college, a brother in high school, and my youngest sister was in middle school. So he died within 28 days of getting diagnosed. I mean, it was so quick. So it's kind of a blur, you know, and this has been 20 years. So I was, you know, however old. But one thing that was, and I was also living out of state. I was in Georgia. He was in Birmingham. So I was around, but when my mom got diagnosed, so he had been gone for 2 years. So she is just trying to survive with these three other children. And she gets diagnosed with breast cancer. She starts going through chemo. And I was working here in Dothan, but I quit my job and was going up to help her with everything. And she got through chemo. And then one of the worst parts, and like something I will never forget, talking about community, she fell and broke her leg and then broke her other foot in our three-story house with a basement, you know, in Birmingham is hilly. And she still had to go to radiation. These men from our church would come over and turn her backwards and take her down our front steps and then get her in the car, and then I would take her to radiation. And, like, that is community. Mm-hmm. Right. We couldn't have done it. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I was dumb and young, you know. So, but, I mean, and so it just, that's why I was so about this organization, because community helped us get through it and survive it. So, but I know there are people here who don't have that. So it's just worthwhile. I mean, I was telling my daughter, like, a lot of these organizations, fundraising goes into marketing and paying staff and then in research, obviously, which is wonderful. But again, like, I just keep saying the word practical, you know, it really funds things that people don't even think about, that they take for granted.
Yeah, and you think about the Wiregrass, all the area that that encompasses. And when Mom was going to radiation and chemo, I was taking her, and that's like, could be 5 days a week or four days a week. Yeah. And the going back, you know, luckily we could do it, we live close, but the ones that live far out that are making those, you know, 30-minute one-way trips every day.
Gas is not cheap.
No. So it's going to really be great to help.
Just a small appointment that still takes out at least
the day.
True. And you miss work.
And then you don't feel good. So,
Well, and that's what I was telling my daughter some more today in the car. I was like, I mean, think about this. Say you work at, you know, you work in fast food or something, and then you get cancer and you're going to treatment and you don't feel good. You feel awful. So you miss some shifts. Then you're behind in your hours. Then you're behind in your light bill. And it all builds.
It trickles.
It really
and
does.
Also impacts the people that are the caretakers, too. Ones that have to take off work or do all that kind of stuff, too. So it's tough. I was talking to Philip last episode about how it's like, you know, I had a family. My brother and his wife at the time were, you know, they didn't have kids or anything like that. So they would do, like, the day shift kind of stuff. But then even through some of the stress kind of stuff, it's like, they felt like I wasn't chipping in enough. It's like, hey, I still have to put food on the table for my own family. So it's like there's a lot of stuff that goes into the layers of impact.
Cancer gets its tentacles in areas of your life that you would never suspect, and resentment builds up with family, and then grief has its whole other set of issues, and it's just
insane. Grief when they're sick. I mean, you know, I feel like that. We as caretakers, we're grieving, watching them, you know, having to go through all of what they have to go to just with the hope that they will go into remission and can live a full life, you know, once their treatments are over. And honestly, I have to say, my friend Robin, she died in April of 2020 during COVID. And she fought for 10 years of her life, and her whole goal was to see her son graduate.
I knew this was coming. I know this story.
And she knew that she was probably at the last phase, because she knew that she wasn't able to go to school and work every day. And she hated, she was a fifth grade teacher. She really hated not being there to show her kids, you know, doing hard things and getting, you know, through hard things with support from teachers or family. And she was in Georgia, had lived in Georgia for quite some time, because at the time her husband's job had taken them there. And And she did. It was really hard the last 2 years. Just a lot of, you know, every time she went for a 6 month checkup, something was different. And you had mentioned the damage that, because she was on the classic Red Devil chemo that a lot of chemotherapy patients unfortunately, you know about. And And she did. She suffered some, you know, heart fluid and lung fluid and just edema in her legs, mm-hmm. where her legs would swell and the lymph wasn't working, the system wasn't working well. But, you know, I always say that because of COVID, it kept me from being able to be with her in that last few days. And I have said from this point forward, I'm COVID, whatever, I'm going to be with my people when mm-hmm. I need to be with my people, because I don't want to have regrets like that. Yeah. You know, I hated to, you know, be where I was. I mean, I was at the beach, so who could say they hated being at the beach, right? It was beautiful. No one was there. The yeah. sand, the water, all the things. But when you get that phone call and you're not there to be with her, because she had been in the hospital and she went home on hospice, and she told the nurse that night, because her cousin, who's like a best friend, like a sister, and we're in our little ya-ya group, you know, she said, "I'll be better tomorrow." And she was. Mm-hmm. She was better. Mm-hmm. She didn't have to have chemo anymore. She didn't have to deal with all of that. But, you know, she did. She could have benefited so much from a foundation like this, because she was working and she was teaching, but insurance only covers, you know, and she has had to skip some, you know, times at work because she, like you said, she did not feel like she could, it was safe for her to go to school because she might catch something, her immune system, and just, you know, the other side of it, her son, you know, from the time that he, you know, he was probably 8, I guess, because when she passed away, he was, you know, 18, and she didn't actually get to see him graduate. And and that was, you know, another very emotional part of it, that it's just stinked. I mean, cancer does
just not fair.
It's not fair.
It is not fair.
And she's in her 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, was there any, like, special ways to remember her that you guys did?
So,
because, I know, like, what I'm getting at is, like, sometimes, like, at graduations or weddings, you know, someone will have, like, an empty chair or
right.
Like
so,
that.
Crazy enough, one of our girls got married, and we did. We all sat in a row together, and she had a chair for her to, you know, remember her.
Like,
and then in 2021, we went for our annual gathering that summer and went down to our beach place, and we had a floral wreath. One of the girls made, you know, had someone make it, and we had a moment on the beach because she always loved the beach. It was mm-hmm. just kind of freeing and uplifting and relaxing, and she loved the beach. She loved it.
She was probably there.
And so, yes, and ironically, there was a tropical storm, you know, at time of year that nothing like that ever happens. Mm. But we were trying to get the wreath out into the water, and it would keep rolling back
I
up.
I don't want to leave y'all.
What somebody said, she don't want to leave us. She don't want to leave. But we did, and we do, like, what was that app that you could do little videos? Is it Marco Polo?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking about the water game?
It was a real thing.
Okay.
That was a couple of years ago.
Last story, and then I'll let somebody else share. But we were all getting the, you know, emails that they're about to, you know, do something with it, and you may lose your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd not been on the app since she had passed away. I had not gone back on it because that was just a fun way for us to communicate, mm-hmm. our little group, mm-hmm. other than just the typical text or FaceTime, mm-hmm. right? And to see her, she was on oxygen, and she was, you could see the gradual change of her, instead of her looking like she's a healthy cancer patient,
mm-hmm.
the, you know, she's on oxygen, she's having to have an oxygen tank, and you can see her PICC line, and, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it was like, but I didn't want to get rid of those.
Yeah.
And I did. I saved them there on my phone. I kind of, you know, pushed through them. When,
right.
But, you know, there are times that I go back just because mm-hmm. you want to hear her voice, mm-hmm. you know, that type of thing. So,
that
it's...
But hearing the voice part, like, So if you don't know what I do, like I do video production kind of stuff, and you can, if off camera, you can see all those VHS tapes and stuff. It's been the neatest thing. One of the things that we've been starting to do is digitize like VHS tapes and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And so it's like being able to hear some, even family members and stuff that I haven't heard of in a while, or hearing the reactions of other people hearing a voice that they haven't heard in a while, that kind of stuff has been pretty special. And with that said, it's like, if you have a chance to record with your phone or anything, like take as many photos and videos of your family time together as much as possible, because to your point, it's just like, I only have so much of my dad's voice that was recorded. Mm. And some of it was when he was preaching, and I'm going to have to listen to that. It's like, but yeah, it's just like, it's hit record. Like, it's so important, because we're spoiled now in this time to be able to have that.
I did take lots of pictures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so, and I put together the whole thing on a reel. I was thankful that I did take the pictures, but we spent so much time together at the end. Mm-hmm. And, I was in denial. Like, y'all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I really thought she would get better.
Yeah.
She did get better.
Yeah. So. I had my head totally in the sand, because he was my dad. He was my hero. He was never sick. He could do anything. And I was like, cancer, we'll be fine. We're just going to do a little chemo, radiation, whatever, we'll be fine. I honestly look back and I'm glad that that was my attitude, because I don't know if I could have survived it. I mean, I really believed up until the week we stayed with him in the hospital. And I'll never forget, my brother was 16, and I saw the look on his face when he accepted that he wasn't going to make it. And I remember that moment, and that's up there, you know. Right. That's not something you ever forget, when your 16-year-old brother accepts that he is not going to make it. And but it was a special time for our family, and I got to tell him everything I wanted to say, and I'm sure you guys were the same with your loved ones. And I had a friend who lost her dad in a motorcycle accident, and she came to my dad's funeral and was like, you got to tell him goodbye. Right. I said, I know. And I gave her the biggest hug. I was like, you're right. And I think about her all the time, because it was just, he was just gone.
Right.
And so I am grateful. I don't know. My dad wasn't, he didn't last long enough to even try chemo or nothing. And I wonder what I've liked him to give it a shot. I'm just not sure.
It's always a big question.
Yeah.
Do you want like the last years or however much time you have to be just fighting and sick the whole time?
That's how we were.
Yeah.
Go out in peace.
Yeah.
I kind of want to go back to, I haven't really talked about or heard much stories about like ways that we memorialize people or did something special or found ways to keep their memory alive or things like that. I'm kind of curious what we kind of talked about what you did.
So one of the things that we did, because she was born and raised here, Robin was, we did the Angel of Hope and had some flowers and put a picture up. And so that was one way that we were able to do that in that time. And then we go and visit, you know, the graveside, and, you know, when we're all together, and or each one when they are back in Dothan, because we all live in different places. And with Mark's dad, when, you know, when you mentioned just now, I'm going to go back a little bit, but when he was diagnosed in 2010 with his bladder cancer, which at that time they called it transitional cell cancer, and it had affected his kidney, ureter, and then made its way to the bladder at, you know, progressively, and then it was, you know, everywhere. But he had made a choice that he really did not want to, you know, go through, like you said, the being sick. He wanted to try to, you know, just see if by taking the kidney and ureter and some other, you know, things, but and I remember one day I had been to the gym and I was driving back home, and we had lived out, both Mark's parents and us, we were across the road from each other, and And I saw him sitting on his front porch. And so I went down the driveway and pulled up. And it was a beautiful day outside. And they, as I'm going to refer to them, Nana and Papa. So Papa was on the porch, and he was outside with their cat watching, mm-hmm. Max play around. And I just, we just struck up a conversation. And I just said, are you still okay with the decision, that you made about not doing treatments? And he said, I really have a piece about it. He said, because, I want to be able to come out and sit on the porch and look up and see it beautiful and not be nauseated and miss out on just the beauty of things. And that was so him. And he had some what I will call remission, but yet we really know that it wasn't, because transitional cell cancer typically, when it's caught, is not a remissional type cancer. It if it gets in your muscle wall of your ureter, bladder, any of that, it's in your bloodstream. And but I do memorializing. So Mark's sister, before he passed away in July, we all decided he loved the beach, and in the place that we have a unit, Mark's brother and his wife have a unit as well, two doors down, and we all decided we're going to go down to the beach for Memorial Weekend. It was packed house, Mark's sister and family, us and our crew, and then Fred and Dale and their kid. I mean, it was just a great, great weekend. And she took the most beautiful photograph of him and watching the sunset, and he's in his light blue shirt and his khaki pants, and he's in his Adirondack chair with his, it's just the Alfred moment. Okay. And you can see just in the sand, you can see little Eli, cause he was first grade, and two of his buddies, and they were playing in the sand. And it's the most, and I call it, just the appreciation photo, that he's just appreciating that he's got all of his kids mm-hmm. and grandkids, and it's a beautiful moment. Mm-hmm. And so I took that photo, and Jerry Ward, who lives in Slocum, is a great artist, and we have lots of great artists that do great things, but he just has a way with doing images, painting the faces, where you get the glimpse of that person. Mm-hmm. And I had him to paint mm-hmm. Mark a picture, from that. Mm-hmm. And we have it at home now, because we had a leak at the beach and I didn't want it down there and get moldy. But the whole point of having it was that we hang it over a piece of furniture at the beach where he loved. It was his last time down there. Yeah.
That's really cool. The reason why I bring this up is mm-hmm. just because it's such a coping mm-hmm. Way to cope with stuff, and everybody has a different way of expressing how they want to grieve or memorialize or remember someone's name. So that's the reason why I'm mm-hmm. curious, because I can tell about the UK story in a sec, but if you got a...
Mine's still yet? Just so new. No, mm-hmm. we haven't done anything.
And it could be, thinking of ways to remember. Mm-hmm. I think
sometimes it's helpful. Well, you said you put together a slideshow, right?
Yes, I did a reel of, all of our, from the day the week she was diagnosed mm-hmm. on to her last picture.
That counts, I promise you. Yeah. I've had it, because I'm the techie, the photographer, anybody that passes away in the family. It's an honor to do it. It's not like a task. Yeah. It's tasking mm-hmm. Because going through all the photos, all the videos is definitely
we did not have that kind of stuff. We chose not to do the video thing for the mm-hmm. funeral, but because I had all those pictures, I just mm-hmm. outside, I had them all in silver frames, mm-hmm. like the actual pictures mm-hmm. that I had. Yeah. I mean, literally it was 2 a.m. the night before the funeral, and I was on my phone mm-hmm. sending pictures to Walgreens, so at 7 in the morning I could go pick them up, and mm-hmm. slap them in a frame. Mm-hmm. So I have all those, but anyway, to look at later.
That's really cool. Slideshows are, I've done quite a few, and then it's crazy. You sit there and go through a timeline of someone's life, mm-hmm. and then, some of the things they might not know about someone, or when you're putting something like that together, or just brings back all the memories. So yeah, it's an honor to do, be able to do that kind of stuff for sure. But my story, like, I'm going to go on my sister-in-law's side of stuff, as far as memorializing, because my brother Carl, the two of us went to the UK on a memorial trip. It was all dedicated to her. She loved the UK. She loved doing stuff like that. She loved the show Doc Martin. And so we went to Port Isaac, was probably like the biggest way that we memorialized her. Went to some different areas that she liked, spread her ashes in those areas. She's a big reader, so we went to Oxford and went to the library there. Put a little, like, I'm not going to disclose the location because we put some ashes. It was like a little pendant that he ordered that had her ashes in it. So he put it in a spot that the two of us know about. And so it's just like there's these little things like that that was pretty cool. One of the ideas that I did for him was, it was one of those, like, you just random time, you know, ideas come along. It's kind of like those shower moments when you're driving, just those kind of quiet moments when you think about something. But like, because of that slideshow, like, I remember all the pictures of her and stuff that I was putting together. And I was like, you know, it'd be really cool. Like, I got this Polaroid printer. So I printed out a stack of Polaroids and had them, you know, I wrote him a letter on the to read on the way over to the UK. So he had a little bit of time to put some thought to it. But I was like, you know, write a characteristic about her, something that you liked about her, something that you loved. And, you know, we had a hashtag going on and just put it somewhere. Like the different places that we went to, whether someone sees it or not or whatever. But you get to leave part of her there, you know, somewhere that she wanted to go. So it's like we did that. So, like, that was...
That's awesome.
I was pretty proud about that idea. Mm-hmm. And it worked out pretty cool. It's something, like, I'll cherish for a long time. I'm working on putting together a photo album from all the stuff. You know, I took my photos and stuff that I normally do and some of the different things that he was doing. So it's just, you know, those are all kinds of ways. Like, find your own creative way to do things. Like, there's no wrong thing to do. There's no small or too big of a thing that you can do. If it's something that's on your heart, do it, because it's a way for you to grieve.
I didn't do this, but it was done for my dad. He was a residential developer, and he developed this golf course community in Birmingham called Greystone. It's where I had my wedding reception and grew up going there, and so many great memories. And when he passed away, at the main gate, they did a flagpole with a plaque. Aww. And he didn't ever meet my children, which is the worst part of all of this for me now. But I took them out to Greystone one day when we were visiting, and I took them out to the flagpole and let them read the plaque, and that was, you know, special. Mm-hmm. And I also try to talk about him a lot, just like little situations, so they feel like they know him, you know, a little bit. But that's the worst part of all of it.
I wish my dad could be around for the grandkids, because like, he would just be so much in love with him. Olivia was only 1 year old at the time. And so, like, she would just light up his demeanor all the time. Like, no matter, he was just all about Olivia kind of stuff. And, like, the last day on his deathbed kind of stuff, we're all saying our goodbyes and stuff. And he could barely do anything. He wouldn't smile. No facial expressions, eyes closed most of the time. But that was the one thing that he would, you know, force a smile about. So, like, that's something I'll always remember, too.
We were thankful for the timing of Mom's passing. It was my kid, both, I have a daughter at Auburn, and my son was out of, he's a senior here, and he was out of school. And Christmas, we'd made it through Christmas, and everyone was making their New Year's plans, and I was spending the night with them on her last night. And so downhill very quick from like 5 p.m. on, just whew. And we'd called hospice in, and I'm an only child, so I was there. And so the actual morning of that she passed away was about 11 or so. So my husband, Jason, and both of my kids, we were all there. So
yeah, it's special. Mm-hmm. It's like a moment you'll never forget.
That was good that we were there and they weren't off at school. You know, I didn't have to bring them in. Like, they were right there with me. So,
we stayed in the hospital with my dad. Like, mom, siblings, we slept on the floor. for a week, and people were coming and going, and, you know, we were just in that little bubble. And, I mean, I was with him when his soul left, and I remember that moment like it was yesterday. And that is in my, like, top five, like, married, had children, been to some really great places, and being there when my dad, you know, left this earth. And it's such a privilege. Like, it was such an honor to be there with him in that moment. And, you know, I wish I had gotten to take care of him more than I did, but I, like I said, I was living somewhere else. My siblings, you know, helped, but, I got to do a couple of things, which is, like I said, just, you never expect that at that age. I mean, when I was in my mid-20s, but it was an honor, like such a privilege to help him and, you know, ease his pain a little bit.
One of the, I'm not going to say funny, but like interesting tone of funny, but my brother, like, so we're all Steelers fans, Pittsburgh Steelers fans. My dad grew up a big fan of all that kind of stuff, stories that he used to tell us. And so my brother had a Ben Roethlisberger jersey, so he put that in the casket. Like, my other brother and I were like, we're gonna yank that before they close out. They go. It's like, we're not gonna let that go to waste. It's like,
so who has that now?
Oh, it's still with
like,
my
who snuck that out of there?
Still with my dad. But that was funny. We're like, what are you doing?
You're gonna regret that.
Ashley, I wanted to ask you, with your mom, like, have you kind of dreaded going in public? Because, you know, when you see people and you're just like, can I not cry today? Is that how you're feeling?
I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I really am.
You are. Yeah. You really are.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've made it to church.
I made it back to church.
Which can trigger so many emotions.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The first day back to church, we were ushers, so we were already standing in the back. So it was ugly, but
yeah,
I was glad to be there. So this one said... I give her the credit. She's like, it's time to get back.
It's time to get back. It's time to get back.
You know, it's easy to sit at home and watch it on TV these days, but I knew I needed to. She loved the church. She sang in the choir.
Which is another way to...
Yeah, to worship, you know, to
memorialize her in a way. Yeah. Like, okay, Mom, I'm here.
Right.
You see me.
I knew I needed to get back.
Yes.
So.
You'll love this, being an Auburn fan.
of course.
My first...
And so is she.
Good. I'm glad... Of course. My dad was a huge Auburn fan. That's where he met my mom. My siblings, we all went there. My grandparents went there. And my first home game back in Jordan-Hare after he had passed away, singing the, you know, song, any of the songs, I'm just like, you know, and
you
it's
cry?
Embarrassing. I cried because I wasn't on medication.
The medicine was not working.
And I still cry.
Well, you do have to drive, too.
Yeah.
Song, though.
Yeah.
It's like when we're over at the UK. So Jenny's favorite band was, or one of her favorite bands was Coldplay, and Yellow was her favorite song. I can't tell you how many, like, so we were ringing in the New Year in Edinburgh, Scotland, and we had this big New Year's plan, all this kind of stuff, and almost every stop that we're at, that song was playing.
Wow.
So you're talking about someone being there with you kind of thing?
Yeah.
I'm just like, too much.
Yeah. You're supposed to be there. She was following you everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
You're
speaking of, like, Auburn and all that, so Auburn was playing in their bowl game that we won't talk about on the day, you know, on that Saturday, I believe. And I was in denial, although, you know, hospice had been there a few days. They had brought the oxygen tank because we were headed into the New Year's Eve weekend, and they just wanted us to be prepared. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the hospice crew was fantastic. But I said, Mom, you know, I'm staying with you, but Jason and I talked about going up to this Auburn game. And she had been laying on the couch. That was her little place that she got out of the bed every single day but her last day.
Mm.
I mean, every day. And she, you know, she had stopped eating. She had stopped almost everything. You know, she was very, very weak, lost tons of weight. But when I said, we're going to go to the Auburn game, but we're going to be back as soon as we can, she sat up on the couch and said, go.
Yeah.
You know, go pull on my Tigers. And I was, well,
when I woke up, you know, as the night went on, I knew that we weren't going anywhere. Yeah. But I do think that she thought I was out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, she kind of said, please go. So, but we didn't, and we were very glad we didn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The score was horrible. I got to stay home and plan a funeral.
And what a great one it was.
But
all of her favorites.
Yes. So it was good. And I knew I had done the right thing.
Yeah.
So, but
how did you feel about the funeral, how it went? Do you remember any of it?
I do. Mm-hmm. It was good. You know, they moved to Dothan, I think in maybe 2015. So they had not been here forever, but we just knew that it was best. Because my stepdad, they had been married for almost 50 years, 47 years or so. You know, he had been my stepdad since I was in kindergarten. And so he's 87 and not great health, but just very confused, which is making it hard now. But so, you know, his children were here. Everything worked out. My aunt came, and then she has a twin brother. And it was really, I was glad it could be here.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier on me and all of us than having to go back to my hometown.
Yes. And try to plan something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was good. First Baptist Church, they did a good job.
Yeah. Good. Since I went there first, before I went to the funeral, I told Mark, I was like, yeah, it's at First Baptist Church. And he was like, okay. We're sitting in the parking lot.
They must not have any
friends. He was like, are you sure?
And it's late.
And so I pulled up whatever information I had, and I went, oh, no, it's not.
It's not at First Baptist.
So, yeah.
I mean, I, you know, only child, never lost anybody, so. But it, you know, nobody wants to do it, but it went off without a hitch, I guess you could say.
I think the theme of this was just memorializing and finding ways to cope and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think most of all, I'm mostly proud of you, Ashley.
I know.
Oh, God.
Like,
you're doing great.
Seriously, like,
this is hard.
This is.
Just
this is
what
so
we were
hard.
Talking about, how
but
it's
you look pretty.
About opening up and all that kind of stuff. And it's not easy for everybody.
I was the first one to cry. Right. Robin's been gone now 4 years. Right. I mean, you know, like, it is
so
still
very
raw.
I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
And keep that up and just know, like, other people are struggling too. And people can relate with you and everybody else that's doing this campaign. I'm very proud of you.
And you're going to, like, feel like you've made strides, and then you're going to see a friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It is not a step back or a setback to get emotional.
Right.
This is your mama. So it is all right. Grief is, it's just the weirdest thing in the world.
I mean, every time I see a rainbow, I get emotional, because the day that we had just family viewing at the funeral home, and we were driving back out to our house, Alfred and Henrietta's house, since we lived across the road from each other, and there was this beautiful rainbow over their property that literally looked like it started or either went into the house or over the house. And I can't help but to think that, you know, that was just a sign of something that says, you know, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I think my, like, an aha moment that I had probably a month ago was, you know, I remember being on my knees a lot and just, you know, praying that she would be healed. When I realized God did answer my prayer, he did heal her. You know, the way he answers our prayers is not always how we want them to be. So for her to be finally cancer-free, because it had spread to the metastasized to the lungs, back in the bladder, you know, it was gross. It was bad. It was ugly, you know.
No more catheter,
you know.
And it is.
Bleeding all the time. You know, it was a lot. And I was right there, you know, doing things that I never thought that I would be doing.
Yeah.
But you do it.
And like your mom, having had the cancer after your dad had passed away, but, you know, having gone, you know, have you know, to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, she, like my mother, never even heard of transitional cell cancer until Alfred had it, and then he passed away in 2012, and then in 2019, she had a terrible car wreck and almost lost her from the car wreck. Mm-hmm. And some of the symptoms she was having, they thought it was trauma from the wreck, and ends up, after two scans, she actually had the same cancer that Alfred had.
Oh, wow.
And it was only found early because of the wreck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, how does that even happen? Mm-hmm. You know, like how breast cancer, it's like, okay, you get it. It's hormone mm-hmm. related, you know, whatever the case is. Mm-hmm. Not to say that that's not terrible. It is terrible. Lost mm-hmm. my best friend. But
there's some stuff that you,
your parents, like
if
you know,
doesn't happen, you wouldn't know otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. And because it, she, I mean, you know, she is here today. Mm-hmm. She's had good checks. And she, we went today to have her hearing aids redone, and she can hear better, and right. she's a happy girl.
Good.
So, but you do feel like, you know, you're just, you don't know until that happens. And when she called, and she called me the day, she was sitting in the parking lot at the emergency room at Flowers Hospital, and she called, and I was like,
"You were there,
I'm coming.
Literally,
I'm at home. Mm-hmm. I'm coming." I went and got in the car, and I sat with her, and I was trying to not be, you know, like immediate Debbie Downer, because you don't know until you know, you know, you don't mm-hmm. know. Like Alfred, we thought once they took his kidney and his ureter, he would be fine, mm-hmm. and 6 months, 3 months, whatever it was, he really wasn't, and. And I had a suspicion that if she was where she was, then it might not be a good outcome.
That it was already in the stud walls. Like, and the doctor who was fabulous here in Dothan, you know, he described it as the cancer in the bladder, that it's like wallpaper, you know, that's the first layer. And then when you get down into the studs, and that's where hers was. And but they removed it. She finished her radiation. She had 3 treatments of chemo left, but she was too sick. Well, and then we had some good, you know, mm-hmm. we got some strength back, and then it reared again. Yeah. And then it never got any better. But
yeah, I was thinking back with the times where you don't expect how it's going to hit you, or your mm-hmm. aha moments, how you put it, was Valentine's Day for me. It's like holidays went through okay. It was mm-hmm. obviously missing them and stuff, but it was because my mom, she was like,
what she would do for
yeah, me. Because, well, it's like I would always take my dad out. It was like one of those muscle memory kind of things. Like mm-hmm. at this point, mm-hmm. usually I'm taking my dad out to go get all like right. the candies, mm-hmm. flowers, all the cards, all that kind of stuff. Like that's something me and him did. And I was like, my mom's not getting anything from him this year kind of thing. So it was like my mom, it's like, how I describe it is like, you know, the holidays, like Thanksgiving and Christmas and all
you
that kind of stuff.
Those are coming.
You're around mm-hmm. groups of people. So it's like, it's not the same, but it's like Valentine's Day is usually specifically for that significant other kind of
right,
stuff.
Yeah.
And I was just like, yeah, I lost it at that point.
Yeah.
That's, mm-hmm. that was when it hit me the most of, I guess, like when reality really set in mm-hmm. About missing them and not having them there.
I think holidays are just, they're so hard.
I would have never thought Valentine's Day out of all
yeah,
the holidays.
Right.
You know.
I mean, yeah. my first Christmas without my dad, I didn't put up a single decoration. It was mm-hmm. like I was on protest for the holidays and just not doing it. But one thing that was cool was we changed up our tradition that year, and we went to the lake with my aunts and uncles and cousins and just got out of our regular traditional stuff. And I also found surrounding myself with more people than usual was a helpful tool. It kind of made that person missing seem a little less obvious. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I don't know.
Than a family of mm-hmm. six when, yeah, I
that's
mean,
right.
totally.
Yeah. And one.
Because they're not in that familiar space.
Right. And then from that, moving forward, my husband's parents invited my mom and my siblings to Thanksgiving, and then it's never changed. Now oh, that wow. tradition that started out with, you know, 4 extra people has now, you know, turned into significant others and children, and it's just become a beautiful thing that has grown out of, you know, a tragedy. But
so your longest protest yet?
Yeah, I'm not protesting anymore. I really love Christmas. I really do. I really get into it.
And that, you know, could be helpful with you guys. I mean, you know, finding a way to do some different things so that, not that you forget about her, but it just doesn't seem as daunting, you know, when it
comes around. I already have, like, the butterflies.
Mm-hmm. I think she'd like you to go to Bermuda.
Yeah, well, she's about to think I want to go a lot of places. And I'm listening. I'm ready to go. But this, I'll kind of tell a funny story. Since all I do is cry. This past Easter, she was slipping again, not well, but insisted. And if you'll notice in all the pictures that I've posted in my little reel that I keep referring to, she kept her smile to her deathbed, literally to her bed. But she insisted on making her macaroni and cheese that my son and daughter, and not to forget you, Jason, husband, adore, that I don't make. I mean, I just don't. I mean, forgive me, I will find the recipe and I will do it one day. But she was insisted, and it probably took her 4 hours to get it done, because she would, and I sent my daughter over there to speed it up, you know, and she would do a little bit and have to go lay down on the couch, you know, and go back. Well, I had bought her all the ingredients to make the macaroni and cheese. But, you know, as you get old, you like to save the things in the refrigerator and the cheese that's been opened. And yeah, we pinky swore that we would not tell her. I did in the very, very end, and I know she's hearing it now. But she did not choose the fresh, sharp cheese.
Oh, goodness.
She tried to use the cheese that had been purchased probably months ago that had been opened. And they would, they didn't,
her, green, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't do the sliding that comes at the top. They would get those scissors out. Well, then you couldn't seal it back up.
Yeah.
So we are all excited. She's an hour late. I hosted Easter, and, you know, they finally get there. Anna Bentley had to go get them. She's walking in like, mother, she was asleep on the couch, you know, because, you know, 20 years old doesn't really understand all that. And we sit down at the table, and everybody is so ready to eat this macaroni and cheese. And we all, I think, threw up in our mouth. Like, it was horrible. Because it was old cheese. Oh, like, it just, and we couldn't, there was nothing we could
age
do.
Aged cheddar?
Aged cheddar. Yeah, it was like blue cheese mac and cheese.
Hey, I'm so sorry.
You know, and I'm like, what? How do I handle? You know, I can't tell her. She's too fragile. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
I love it.
And I did say, I'm gonna go get some more in the kitchen. It's like scraping it in the garbage. But yes, Jason's like, do not, because I probably would have gotten upset with her. You know, just because I want things to be kind of perfect. And it wasn't.
So you'll have a special recipe.
Well, I'm fearful. I know.
You need to find that.
I know. But
she has it.
Easter is coming up, for those who don't realize, and somebody's got to make the mac and cheese.
You got it.
So I do think I need to do it, and I don't mind using brand new cheese.
Just call it fuzzy cheese.
Yeah.
Fuzzy cheese.
Yes, I will use the new stuff.
That's funny.
Because I buy cheese, right. When it's buy one, get one free, like, I may not even need cheese, but if it's buy one, get one free, I buy cheese. So,
really?
Yeah. Because cheese, you know.
It's cheese.
It's cheese. It's just cheese. You can put it on anything.
We'll post that recipe when it comes out.
Yes, I will let y'all.
Yeah. Yes, because what? We only have a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I need to probably start practicing.
Mm-hmm.
But
I bet Jason will appreciate that.
Yes.
And
I mean, he's
Charlie,
just, yeah.
They will appreciate it, a little, you know, practice run. It's
crunchy, but also soggy.
And she wasn't eating. Like, she...
So she didn't eat it?
I mean, she had this perfect plate with all the things, you know, because I made her plate. You know, you need to try one. Hey, it's funny how your role reverses, you know, it's full circle.
You're so right.
So I'm fixing her plate and telling her she can't get up and go hide Easter eggs until she eats two vegetables. You know, I'm kidding. I wish I would. A roll would have been fine, you know. So she didn't even eat it to know how bad it was, you know, or didn't know. So, but I could went to her as soon as I got to her house. I was like,
I know I got the right cheese.
Yeah, I tossed that.
Yeah, so, yeah, that will forever be your home.
The mac and cheese the of Easter 2023.
You should have taken a bit of it and shellacked it. Put it in a
yeah.
Kind of like you do your kids' boots or shoes, you know.
Put it in bronze.
Bronze it.
Bronze that mac and cheese.
That mac and cheese was gone before we got up from the table.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's a great story.